You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a crossover kind of Locked On Podcast Network episode, Locked On Clippers and Locked On Pacers here. I'm Tony East with the West Indianapolis Community News and the editor at 8.9 seconds. And the Pacers play the Clippers for the first time this year, actually, March 23rd. That's super random. But my Clippers connoisseur and a guest that I paid a dollar to talk to, Lucas Hahn on the other line, the editor over at the SB Nation Clippers site and the host of Locked On Clippers. Lucas, how are you doing, man?
I'm good. You know, I heard someone say that Infinity Wars was the most ambitious crossover in history, but I think we just have to show them this podcast.
Gosh, you have the joke ready and everything. Oh, that's a good one. Those memes are cracking me up right now. So the Clippers, I talked about this earlier in the week with my co-host Adam, now have noted Pacers killers Avery Bradley and Tobias Harris, but I believe Avery Bradley's not going to play.
Yeah, Avery Bradley shut down for the season.
Yes. So noted Pacers killer Tobias Harris gets a fifth crack at this team. Go read Caitlin Cooper's piece about Thad Young literally sleeping guarding Tobias Harris. But how have the Clippers looked since that trade? We don't get to see Blake Griffin, so I want to know how the Clippers look since this trade.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of similar to the other end. It's like the Pacers, I don't think I've seen a minute of Pacers basketball this season. So, you know, it's just funny that they're not playing until so late in the year. But yeah, I mean, the Clippers have looked better than, you know, pretty much anyone thought they would. They've kind of stayed right on par with where they were before the trade, which definitely it seemed like they were kind of packing it in for the season and playing the long game. And they've pretty much stayed on par. What's been interesting about this team is that their offense has been phenomenal. Like since the Blake trade, I have the number right here somewhere. Since the Blake trade, they're averaging like 115 points a game. Like wow. They're just scoring and scoring and scoring. Tobias Harris is averaging 20 points, 7 rebounds, and actually 3 assists. So he's had a lot of like 4 or 5 assist games because they're playing this really balanced, spaced out offense. But the Clippers, since the trade, are allowing 112 points per game, which only the Phoenix Suns have allowed more than that over the course of the season. And the Phoenix Suns are pretty bad. So the Clippers' defense is as bad as their offense is good. It makes for a lot of fun and exciting games. It doesn't make for a team that is very consistently good at winning a ton of basketball games against good teams.
Yeah, that's the fun way to play, right? Good offense.
Yeah. So if you're gonna miss the playoffs, scoring 120 points in every game but allowing 125 is a pretty good way to go about. I would way rather that than scoring 95 and allowing 100.
Speaking of miss the playoffs, I'd like to apologize for losing to the Pelicans twice this year and the Timberwolves once.
Yeah, you know, I'm still a little hurt about that.
But we take full responsibility. Who do you think you're more like? Well, I guess I want to talk about this anyway. Do you think you're more likely to catch the Timberwolves or the Pelicans?
I think so. I'm not. This is based on me looking at the schedule like a week ago, and so I don't remember what the schedule looks like. I just remember when I looked at the schedule, I thought that the Pelicans were more likely to slide than the Timberwolves, even though I think the Timberwolves might be the weaker team overall without Jimmy Butler. I feel like the Pelicans had a little bit tougher games remaining. Again, this is just my memory. But and in addition to that, I just think that they're so dependent on Anthony Davis, and Anthony Davis is so injury prone that even one or two games, you know, or if he doesn't come back in the second half of a game because of this or that, like that's a loss for the Pelicans. So I think the Pelicans are probably the more likely team to drop out of those two between the Wolves and the Pelicans. But honestly, I think probably the most likely scenario is that the Clippers don't pass anyone. The Clippers and the Nuggets are the two teams that end up on the outside looking in.
Hey, you could find a way to out-tank the Pistons. Actually, that wouldn't help you. You have their pick. Never mind. 13-11 is cool, right? That's cool.
Yeah, 13-11 would be great. I'm kind of – what I've been really watching lately is make sure the Pistons finish behind the Lakers. And hopefully even the Hornets are right there. Yeah, if the Hornets can pass the Pistons, that would be 10th. So the Clippers could end up with 13th and 10th. That's not bad.
Yeah, that's enough to move up if you want. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's like you know, everyone has their different theory about the draft, but some of them are like, oh, well, there's 13 players in this draft, like 13 good players. So if you could get two of those 13, I guess you'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, that would make the Blake trade look quite good, because I think the Clippers mm-hmm. play out like bandits myself.
Yeah, you know, it was such a tough deal, especially for Clippers fans, just Blake being here for so long and all of the struggles that he'd gone through was kind of, you know, a lot of times when a player goes to a team and they struggle, there becomes like an animosity between like the franchise and the fan base and that player, because that player's struggle ends up being kind of isolated to him. But with Blake, it was almost like his struggle was the franchise's struggle. So the frustration from the injuries, everything, it was like a shared experience. And so losing that was like, it was like a bad breakup. You know what I mean? It hurt. It hurt for a lot of fans. And, you know, the emotional part of it was really more difficult, I think, than any trade I can remember since I've been covering Clippers the last 7 years. But when you look at it objectively, and this is what I keep coming back to every few weeks to try to just look at it, take the names away and look at the rest, man, it looks good. They got 4 years younger at power forward. They got rid of that massive contract. They're getting essentially the same level of production, and they added a lottery pick. So, you know, I do think they probably won the trade at this. If we're from looking at it from where we are right now, it looks like they won the trade.
And they made the Pistons worse, so the Pacers are going to make the playoffs, so that's pretty dope.
You are welcome.
Oh, man.
You know what? The Pistons were pretty bad to begin with, so I don't know if they were going to ever make it. But
somehow Reggie Jackson is, like, both not good and super important for them. I don't understand it.
Yeah, they're a weird team.
So I want to do this last thing before we talk about this specific game. So I'm obsessed with Patrick Beverley, and I think he's like the ideal player to put next to Victor Oladipo. And he is a team non-guaranteed team option. Is that what it is next year?
Yeah, it's not. So it's not a team option. It's just a non-guaranteed contract. I think
so he doesn't even have to opt in to be traded. This is great. Okay. So I would like to find a way what would you like for Patrick Beverley? Because I would like him to be traded to my team.
Honestly, I think it would probably have to be after the free agency period.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I think, you know, I don't think the Clippers are really looking to move Patrick Beverley anyway. You know, I mean, but you know, to just engage in the conversation, it would have to be after the free agency period. The Clippers have so much in flux with their guard situation. Milos Teodosic has a player option. Austin Rivers has a player option. Avery Bradley is going to be a free agent. They just signed Lou Williams to an extension, so he's going to be around. Then they've got a bunch of young guys that they like. They have Juwan Evans and Sindarius Thornwell, both rookies who've spent time in and out of the rotation this year. They have Tyrone Wallace, who's going to be a restricted free agent this summer. And they've got those two, as we talked about, those two lottery picks, or likely lottery picks, that, you know, one of those could turn into a guard depending on which players the Clippers like. So if the Clippers end up in a situation where they're sitting on six guards and they're able to get Avery Bradley back at a decent price as the seventh guard, but they don't want to carry seven guards, and maybe they look and see, well, can we trade any of these guys who we currently have and get something good as a way to sort of maximize the utility and value that we're getting out of the roster? That's kind of how the Clippers have been operating, how Jerry West has been operating. It's just asset accumulation. So I could see them then saying, well, let's see, you know, Patrick Beverley, who's under contract, what can we get for him? It probably would be something that it would have to be for some kind of a prospect, a pick, especially because he doesn't make that much money. He only makes $5 million next season. Probably looking at, I don't know specifically on the Pacers roster, but probably like a first round pick, and then maybe a filler contract, something like that.
Man, if the pick was like 24 for the Pacers, I might do that, but it's going to be like 19 or 18, and I don't want to do that.
Well, and, you know, I think, like I said, I don't think that would be something the Clippers would really look at until mid-July.
Right.
So it would probably be, I don't know what the Pacers' future pick situation is, but it would probably be the 2019 pick, not the 2018 pick.
I'm out.
But then you're out. Yeah. but it would be a 2019 where you had Patrick Beverley. But then from that perspective, if it's going to be the 24th pick because you have Patrick Beverley, the Clippers might not, you know, that's not a ton of value. So, you know, it's a tricky situation. I would be pretty surprised if Beverley and Tobias Harris are the two guys who I would be pretty surprised if they were moved.
Everyone else, I think, probably the two best value contracts on the team.
Yeah, I think so too.
So that makes some sense to me. Well, that's unfortunate because I really would like Patrick Beverley on this.
Yeah, you know, I felt this way for years with the Rockets, just looking at that contract and what he brings defensively, just thinking, how can I make it work? How can I make it work playing on the trade machine? But, you know, it ended up having to be Chris Paul for it to...
The best player in franchise history. Except actually, random tidbit, DeAndre Jordan's about to pass him in total win shares and become first in franchise history.
Yeah, and DeAndre Jordan already has played the most games in Clippers franchise history as well.
Wow. But they're going to play tonight, actually. We should probably talk about that.
Yeah, we can do that.
Sure. Yeah, so DeAndre is an interesting transition. That was actually an accident, but he's who I want to start with because I know he's obviously like awesome at defending the basket. That's been his thing for years. And the very few times I've watched him this year, he's still been pretty good at that. But it's different because Chris Paul kind of kept guys away from him in the past, and now he's got a lot more action going on defending him at the rim.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think, you know, the game plan the whole time is just going to be get Miles Turner to pull him away from the rim and try to attack. So is he better at defending in space this year? You know, because more reps are coming at him, does he look any worse? You know, would that game plan even be something that is possible for the Pacers?
Yeah, so the one thing that where DeAndre tends to get exposed is his role is so much that of an anchor that he doesn't really go out with guys. So like as far as Miles Turner pulling him away from the basket, I don't think Miles Turner, I don't think that's going to be an effective strategy for the Pacers. But what will be a very effective strategy is Miles Turner is probably going to be able to shoot wide open 18 footers all night.
Okay.
You know, and this is just the Clippers have gotten burned by this over the years as much as DeAndre has helped them as an anchor. Just the way the scheme is set up, guys like Marc Gasol shooting open threes all day. Miles Turner's probably going to get four or five wide open looks where DeAndre's standing about 10 feet away from the basket and he sees the pass go out to Turner and just goes to get the rebound instead. He doesn't close out, especially because on the other side, not only is DeAndre tasked with being the help anchor down low, but he's also tasked with being the primary rebounder. The Clippers play very small around him. They're very rarely will they play another big man like Montrezl Harrell next to him. So normally it's DeAndre playing with like Tobias Harris and then three guards. So DeAndre is the guy who has to get the defensive rebound if Miles Turner or whoever else the stretch big man is misses. So yeah, I don't know that you're going to be able to pull DeAndre away to open the lane for Oladipo so much as Oladipo is going to drive in, get that help, and then Miles Turner is just going to feast on open shots. The Clippers tend to allow a lot of points to skilled offensive centers because of this.
That's pretty much what just happened against the Lakers. Brook Lopez just didn't leave the paint.
Yeah.
Miles Turner was able to hit quite a few. But the strategy of what you described, not exactly Jazz-esque, but similar, has killed the Pacers in the past. They lead the league in mid-range shooting percentage, which is awesome, but they like really believe they can make a lot of these. They take way too many of them. And sometimes, you know, they come around to pick like that and they'll see DeAndre waiting under the basket and they'll just pull up a not good 15-footer. And that kind of stuff, you know, really kills and stalls their offense. So maybe it'll end up working out of him just hanging out under the basket.
Yeah, I mean, it could work. And then the other thing is DeAndre, when the Clippers hedge out on pick and rolls, which they could do if a guy like, you know, I could see them coming into this game thinking that Oladipo is the real threat and we're not too concerned about the other guys. And so what they could do is if Turner is setting those pick and rolls, DeAndre is actually pretty good at hedging or even switching. We see the Clippers do this a lot against even the Warriors. And DeAndre does a pretty good job on a guy like Steph Curry when he really steps out and moves his feet. He's very mobile. So we could see some switching action like that. That could be a little bit interesting to see how that breaks down. And then I don't know exactly how good Miles Turner is in the post. I know he's athletic and he has a little bit of perimeter skill for a big guy, but he could end up with a lot of switches onto a guy like Austin Rivers down low. And that could be a little bit of an interesting angle for the Pacers to try to exploit.
Yeah. For the first 55 games of the year, I would have said Turner's not super good in the post, but he recently said that some teammate called him soft and now he's like killing people down there. So maybe a perfect timing for that.
Maybe.
What are you looking for Clippers-wise? What do you think they're going to try to exploit?
Well, you know, I think from the Clippers, they're just going to try to score. And so the question,
really? I mean,
the question, the question that I have, you know, anytime we play someone, I have one of these conversations is how much can you score? Because the Clippers really come into every game at the jump ball thinking that they're going to score 120, and they don't particularly care if they let up 120. I mean, we talked about this in the first part of our conversation. Do the Pacers have the firepower to go off for that kind of game? Because we've seen some of the games the Clippers play against, you know, I know the Pacers are better than these teams, but the Clippers play against a team like the Bulls, right? And the Bulls, even with the Clippers not playing defense, just don't really have the guys to piece together 120 points. And so the Clippers end up winning like 125 to 112 or something like that. The Pacers, you know, as in terms of scoring, have one of the lowest scoring averages of any playoff team. It's just, you know, around 105 points. They don't particularly have a ton of super potent weapons outside of Victor Oladipo, but what they do have is a ton of shooters, you know, Bogdanovich, Turner, Collison, you know, guys who can all hit threes at a pretty good rate. Is this a team that is, you know, fully capable of putting up a 120, 125 point night?
You know, their first game of the season, they dropped 140 on Brooklyn. And then they scored 130 against, I don't remember who, but they've only done it twice. And they started off just scorching from everywhere on the floor. If you listen to Dunk Don, you'll remember he called their game against the Magic after like 10 games of the regression bowl, which was pretty funny. But they have kind of fallen back, and a lot of it's on Vic's three-point shooting, which is like 8 or 9% lower than it was early in the year. But they're 13th in offensive rating, so they can score, but now they're playing a lot slower. As teams start to like double-team Oladipo, and you know their offensive sets are just more seen in film room sessions. You know, they just play a little slower, more meticulously, and they don't end up scoring higher numbers. You know, they've been under 100 probably like a team. I mean, this is, I haven't looked this up, but it seems like against the Jazz they were under 100, against New Orleans they were under 100. So recently they've just had more of those than in the first half of the year, so that could end up being something that plays in the Clippers' favor. Especially, I think the Clippers are one of the faster teams, aren't they?
Yeah, especially since, you know, the Clippers have been playing fast all year, but especially since the trade, they've been playing very fast. And you know, yeah, it's not even been an efficiency thing, this scoring. It's just a pace thing. They play very freely. There's not a ton of structure, so you end up with for every beautiful possession, there's an ugly possession. Sometimes there's shot clock violations, which doesn't, or you know, bad shots at the end of the shot clock because they don't have, you know, a very reliable way to get good looks. They just kind of play huge volume possessions. But it's interesting you say that the Pacers have had a lot of games under 100 points, because I think the Clippers in 2018, since January 1st, have only held an opponent under 100 points once. Oh. I think they've allowed over 120 points 8 times. So, oh. I mean, it's really kind of staggering. Every time I check the numbers, I find something new where I'm like, this is just insane. The pace that they're playing at. Actually, that 8 times number isn't since the new year. It's since the Tobias Harris trade. Since the Clippers got Tobias Harris, they've allowed over 120 points 8 times in 21 games.
Oh my gosh. Dang.
I don't think I can remember seeing an NBA team, you know, in the last decade that just puts up points and allows points the way that the Clippers have in the last couple of months.
Yeah. I think I just did it. 6 out of the last 9 games. Let's get a nice for that. The Pacers have been under 100. I didn't even mean to do that. I was just counting, and it just ended up that way. 6 out of their last 9, they've been under 100 since they lost to the Atlanta Hawks. I can't believe I have to say that sentence still. But, yeah, they've been under 100 a lot more recently, and we've been trying to write about it at 8.9 seconds. You know, a lot of it is Victor, just the regression from him shooting from 3 has been – really big. He can still do literally everything else the same as he has all year, but his three-pointer being gone really hurts their offense. And Collison was injured for some of those games, so it's not perfect. The Darren Collison revenge game, by the way, he's going to be awesome, I just believe. But they've been a lot worse, you know, efficiency-wise recently. They've been getting it done on the defensive end. It's really switched. I think this is the first time, like, this is the first day of the entire season that their defensive rating has been better, like, than their offensive rating. And that's not what I meant to say. Like, their defense is 12th and their offense is 13th. That's what I mean by that. And I think that's the first time that's happened all year. So, you know, it could just be good timing for the Clippers that they're playing the Pacers at right now.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely seems to me to be a matchup that just in terms of the way the Clippers play, there haven't been a lot of teams that have been successful holding the Clippers down offensively and keeping it a low scoring game. When they've lost, it's been because they've lost 128 to 115, those kind of games. The only team I can really think of that has consistently been able to slow the Clippers down and beat them in low scoring games is, and this is going to crack you up, the Houston Rockets. slowed the game down against the Clippers. They've beaten them like, I want to say like 101 to 96 and like 95 to 92 or something like that. Like those, because Houston sees how the Clippers play and go, oh, we're going to slow them down because they can't win a 100-point game. It's kind of like, I used this analogy earlier in the week too. You know, Syracuse in March Madness right now, Syracuse is not capable of winning like a 70-point game. They can't score well enough to do it. But they can win 55 to 52, and they're really good at keeping games within that 55 to 52-point range, right? The Clippers are the opposite of that. The Clippers really can't win a game that's 98 to 92 or 105 to 102 or whatever like that. They've got to win 115 to 113. It's got to be up there for them to really be competitive. Just what you said about revenge game with Darren Collison, I don't know if that's so much of a revenge game. I mean, that was kind of good terms. Oh, I think.
We do that every time a Pacer plays their former team.
But what is a revenge game? I have to ask about this. Is Lance Stephenson? What is up with Lance? How is Lance doing this year? Because Lance is a guy who may be the most controversial Clipper within the fan base ever.
Okay, I have to ask you a question before I answer your question. Yeah, okay. Well, what did you think of his tenure in LA?
Oh, he was pretty bad.
I hate having to do this because this is a Pacers podcast and Pacers fans love Lance Stephenson, but I really do not like watching Lance play. He's just kind of crazy and all over the place, and he turns the ball over more than anyone ever and takes really inefficient shots. Holy cow, he was horrible on the Clippers.
Yeah.
That was his best three-point shooting stint ever, but he was a turnover machine.
Yeah, and I mean, that was just the thing is that the Clippers thought, you know, they were trying to take a swing. They were still working with the Paul Reddick Griffin Jordan core at the time, right? They thought, well, we need to try to take a swing to get a really skilled small forward. So they went out and they got Lance Stephenson. They bought low on Lance Stephenson for like Matt Barnes and Spencer Hawes was the trade, I think, right? They traded like almost nothing for him. Not that Matt Barnes wasn't good in his time as a Clipper, but Lance theoretically could do everything Matt Barnes could do and more. And Lance just came in and like could not learn the offense, could not learn the defense. He was cutting when he was supposed to be on the wing and passes were going out of bounds. He was crazy, out of control, not passing the ball. Anytime that he was relatively open and Chris Paul decided that he wasn't the guy to pass it to, he would throw his hands up and have kind of a fit on the court. And so the coaches pulled him. And he got his chances, and I was rooting for him. A lot of Clippers fans were rooting for him, but I don't think he ever really did anything to earn minutes. It didn't surprise me that Clippers traded him. Of course, it was a bad trade because they traded a first-round pick along with his contract to get Jeff Green. But it's certainly – the first-round pick is the part of that trade that hurt. The Lance Stephenson part of the trade is not the part that hurts. I get that he's exciting. He has these highlights and all that, and he does some fun things. But I just don't – I never saw him productively help the Clippers towards winning, except for, you know – a game here, everyone has a game here or there where they come in and hit shots, right? But he never really indicated to me that he was consistently capable of helping the team win, which is something that obviously he did in his first stint in Indiana. I know he was having some success earlier this season, but I mean, what do you think he's just done? Like, is this it?
So, yeah, I have a deeper answer. So for what he is, like if you just showed me like here's a stat sheet of a random NBA player and it was Lance's, I'd be like, wow, this guy's awful. Mm-hmm. But he is a fan favorite in Indiana, and I can't explain this. It's one of the most magical things in the NBA, and you're gonna see it because they play twice in 9 days. At Bankers Life Fieldhouse, Lance Stephenson is good, and his energy is electric, and like the bench is sparked when he comes in the game, and he makes these great and like the correct pass, and he makes 40% of his shots, which is not good, but it's good for him. And like people are happy and he's good and smiling and does the air guitar and all that. And then he'll play not in Baker's Life Fieldhouse and his antics are bad and he throws the ball out of bounds. And, you know, every time he catches the ball, Corey Joseph gets mad for some reason. And he's just not a useful player. And so I think on Friday, you're going to be like, wow, Lance doesn't stink. And then come April 1st, you'd be like, wow, Lance is awful. So in this particular game, first of all, 100% chance him and Austin Rivers get into some scuffle, like 100,000.
Yeah, you know, they didn't get along. I mean, I don't know whether they got along or not, but a big portion of Lance's antics came at the expense of Austin Rivers, you know, because Austin Rivers is a guy who takes a lot of shots and frankly, you know, has been quite good with the Clippers over the last few years. And Lance, I think, just wasn't willing to accept that, that when they were on the second unit, that Austin was kind of a priority over him. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if there was a little bit of animosity left over there.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see that. There's a lot of guys like Kelly Oubre that I, you know, I think every time they match up, something's going to happen. But even if there's no feud, you know, he'll look solid. I believe, I really do believe he'll look solid tonight. But come the next game in LA, unless he's thinking like, oh, I have to kill the Clippers, like I think he'll just be bad. Basically,
yeah. You know, I pulled up his splits when you mentioned that. His career splits, you know, a little bit better at home than on the road, but nothing crazy. But this season, 45% from the field, 34% from deep at home, 42% from the field, 26% from deep on the road. And that's 37 home games and 35 road games. Like, that's a pretty substantial sample size. 11 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists at home, 8 points, 4 rebounds, 2.5 assists on the road. I mean, that's
over 2 points better per 100 possessions too.
His offensive rating is 10 points better at home than on the road.
Yeah,
that's insane.
It's bizarre.
He must just really love those Pacers fans as much as he loves him.
I can't explain it. I swear, I need to write about this. It's like a magical power is instilled in him inside of Bankers Life Fieldhouse, where he's like a competent NBA player again, and it's literally the funniest thing. It's just so magical. Like, his true shooting percentage at home is 54%. That's okay. It's whatever. On the road, it's 47, which is like horrible, like Lonzo Ball levels. Like, so I don't know what is causing this phenomenon, but I'm glad it happens, because like there are times, and their only win against the Pistons this year, ironically, Lance was like amazing in the fourth quarter of that game, and he's the only reason they won. But then, you know, they go on the road to whoever, like Miami, and they beat Miami, but they go to Miami and he is an idiot and they end up losing because he has 6 turnovers and I'm frustrated. And yeah, we'll see how that goes.
All right. I've got a big picture question to get your perspective on. So zooming out a little bit from this game. So Pacers right now are in 5th place in the East, which is very good. They've certainly exceeded expectations this season. You know, a lot of people wrote them off after the Paul George trade.
Really?
But what I'm wondering is, you know, the Clippers are kind of in this conundrum right now where they can make this push and try to get back into the playoff race. They're 2 losses out, which is not a death sentence. But if they make it in at this point, they're probably going to be 7th or 8th. They're going to play a first round series against Houston or Golden State. They're probably going to get swept in that series. And because the bottom of the East is a little bit weaker than the bottom of the Western playoff race, moving into the 8th seed in the West probably means going to the 17th overall pick in the draft. Whereas being in 9th place would be 14th, being in 10th place would be 13th. So, you know, from the perspective of like a team like Indiana, what do you think the value is for the Pacers being good this year, getting these playoff reps, seeing what they have with these guys, having guys exceed expectations versus what the value would have been from just being bad and getting a good draft pick? Because I think a lot of, you know, there's the getting the higher draft pick, like finishing in 10th place and getting the 13th pick instead of finishing in 8th place and getting 17th. That's a very tangible increase in value, like moving up.
Oh, for 4 sure. Picks, for sure.
You can clearly quantify what the difference is between 13th and 17th. It's a lot harder to quantify.
What is that, Mitchell versus DJ Wilson? Like,
yeah, exactly. And it's a lot harder to quantify what the value is for a group to accomplish making the playoffs when nobody thought they could, to get that playoff experience, to win games together, and just, you know, from a fan base perspective, just the fun of having extra competitive playoff games to watch. So where do you sit on this in terms of the Pacers are obviously going to be in the playoffs this year, you know? Personally, I don't really think that they're a team that'll be competitive with in a second round series with Boston or Toronto or Cleveland. But I mean, where do you sit on that value of at what point do you get more from being good but not great than you do from just going into the draft and getting a higher pick than you otherwise could have?
I think that that is a timeline of your franchise question. So mm-hmm. for Indiana, I think before the year, I would have answered completely oppositely. But now that I know that this team is good, you know, that my answer is, I think the playoffs have a lot more value because Oladipo is going to be on the team for 4 years. Miles Turner has another year before restricted free agency. Sabonis has two more years before restricted free agency. Glenn Robinson is going to come back next year. He's only 24. They have a ton of cap space, and they'll still have their pick, which will be around 20. And you probably don't know that. You definitely don't know this. They haven't picked in the top 10 since 1990. But they still get guys like, you know, Steven Jackson, Danny Granger, Paul George, Reggie Miller, you know, outside the top mm-hmm. 10. They have the history of good draft picks and building this style of team. So I really think the playoff experience is more valuable because, A, they've shown they can pick well and develop a team without top picks, and B, they need to get the playoff vibe and feeling in this roster and court that they have now, because, you know, they're only two pieces away from being a solid contender in this conference. They just have to prove it and, you know, get that playoff experience under their belt.
Yeah, I think for the Clippers, it's maybe a little trickier of a proposition, just because the guys who would be, you know, the guys who are the biggest part of this playoff run, like Tobias Harris has one more year, then he's an unrestricted free agent. Lou Williams is on the wrong side of 30. DeAndre Jordan's going to be an unrestricted free agent this summer. Austin Rivers has a player option this summer. I don't really know, you know, the next, like the best case scenario for the Pacers, for example, would be like that within the next 3 years, the Pacers would want to be at contender status if they can make the right moves and keep improving and that sort of thing. The Clippers might have a similar like 3-year goal, but I don't know what portion of the players that are part of this team right now are actually going to be a part of that team that they want to have 3 years from now. I think it's a lot more for the Clippers based on building value and making moves down the line to get guys that they want, as opposed to building around, you know, Miles Turner and Victor Oladipo. Like the Pacers kind of already have those two guys who they feel really good about. So at the same time, the Clippers roster next year will probably be substantially similar to their roster this year, and getting a few games in the playoffs. And, you know, I think maybe just the overall sense of accomplishment of making it after fighting so hard as they fought all season, I think missing it could be kind of demoralizing and backbreaking for this group of guys playing together. So, it's really tough to consider if they had a chance at getting to six where they did before, you know, this recent 4-game losing streak, and at six get you a first round date with the Blazers. That's not necessarily a series that you're going to win, but it's a series that's going to be far more competitive, at least, than against the Warriors or the Rockets. If you know, getting into that, I think there's a lot of value. I just don't know, 13th pick and no playoffs versus getting swept by the Rockets and getting the 17th pick. I'm kind of leaning, and it's funny. I think my answer now is the opposite of what it has been all season, but I'm kind of starting to lean towards give me the better pick.
It's time. And I think for the Clippers too, a difference is this, like the Pacers have pretty solid cap flexibility. And I know the Blake trade helped you guys out a lot, but aren't you guys at like 60 mil plus DeAndre's cap hold if he opts out, plus Avery Bradley's cap hold if he opts, like you have a ton of,
The Clippers don't really figure to have cap space this summer. It would be more, the Blake trade more helped them for like talking about 2019.
Yes, which is good.
Max space.
Which is good. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not going to be, you know, this July, they're not going to be players, I don't think.
So I think the young, cheap labor in the summer of 2018, especially when you're not going to be a player anyway, makes more sense.
Yeah.
Also, the funniest thing for me, the funniest Clippers thing ever is that they're playing Radulica, Varmar, and Delfino over $1 million this year. That is sad.
And they're still playing. They're paying Paul Pierce as well.
Oh, I didn't even have that one. Dang, I missed that.
Yep. Paul Pierce signed a 3-year deal, and the last year was like only $1 million guaranteed, and then he retired for the last year, so obviously he only got the $1 million. But yeah, Paul Pierce is. So it's funny, the Clippers have been navigating the hard cap, the luxury tax all season, because they're trying to get underneath that repeater status, and we're literally over here counting the tens of thousands of dollars for, do they have money for this 10-day? Can they convert this two-way guy to rest of season? Or like, can they stretch the 45 days on the two-way contract and then they have to wait 2 weeks and then convert him and fit under the luxury tax? Meanwhile, they're sitting here paying $1,096,080 to Paul Pierce, $650,000 to Delfino, $511,000 to Farmar, $252,000 to Radulchika. Like, to these guys combined, about $2.5 million.
Yeah, that, well, in the deal with Tyron Wallace that they had to wait to sign him so they could be under the tax after the signing? I guess there's not enough prorated days left. Never mind.
Yeah, so but by the time that Tyron Wallace's days were up and the Clippers shed money, like not a ton, but in the Blake Griffin trade, they shed like $500,000, which, you know, as we know, is more than enough for a rest of season deal. So, yeah, the Tyron Wallace thing didn't end up being a luxury tax situation. It was more of the Clippers wanted to try to get him to sign a long-term deal.
Didn't they offer him 4-year team option every year? I'm pissed about that.
Yeah, they offered him 4 years non-guaranteed. And the thing about Tyron is the Clippers can't offer more than the minimum for next season. What's the worst that a guy who's played as well as he's played is going to get next season? The minimum. So really the best offer the Clippers could try to give him is a guaranteed minimum for next year. And he's going to get the guaranteed minimum for next year. So it didn't make a ton of sense to try to talk about that extension, but the Clippers tried to get him to sign like the TJ McConnell deal that the Philadelphia 76ers seem to have mastered. He wouldn't do it, which I think is smart for him. And I don't think he should have signed it. And, you know, the Clippers kind of ended up then they didn't want to backtrack from their negotiating stance. So they kind of screwed themselves with that, I think. Just speaking of the funny stretch provision for the Clippers and those guys are paying. The funniest thing for me is that the Detroit Pistons are still going to be paying Josh Smith $5.3 million for not just this year, but each of the next 2 years after this. That's just hilarious. Like, that is, every time I look at their cap sheet, that just makes me laugh.
I think it's going to be funny at Damian Lillard's retirement party when the Blazers are still paying Andrew Nicholson $2 million.
I think at Damian Lillard's retirement party, the Blazers are still going to be paying about half of their current roster by the time they stretch the last couple years of Evan Turner and Mo Harkless and Myers Leonard. I mean, talk about cap sheet hell. No one has managed their cap sheet worse in my lifetime than the Portland Trailblazers
And O'Shea's – we're so off topic. We should talk about this off the air. But O'Shea's like a good GM. That was just such a bad summer.
Yeah. He just – had more money than everyone else at the time when people were spending their money the worst, and I guess didn't have the foresight to see that he should wait until later. But yeah, that was a disaster.
We should probably wrap up and do our own banter afterwards.
Okay.
Thank you all for staying this long for this crossover episode. Lucas, where can my listeners follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, so my Twitter is at Lucas J. Han. My website is clipsnation.com. And the Twitter for the website is at ClipsNationSBN.
Yes, good. The only trusted source for Clipper stuff.
The only. No one else. They're all frauds.
Clipperholics is not a real website. as always, I'm at TEastNBA. And we're at Locked On Pacers tweeting all the time still. I know Locked On Clippers doesn't tweet. Lucas, you should get on that. Thanks for listening.
I have so many Twitter accounts. I need to keep track of all my burners as it is.
I actually just recently revealed in an episode that I have a burner that no one knows about. And someone DM'd me and said they think they found it, but they didn't. But I love that people are trying to find it. It makes me so happy. Everybody have a great weekend, and thanks for stopping by, Lucas.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for having me, Tony.